नमो विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनिति नामिनि नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादि पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्त वृंदा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा। सो थैंक यू ऑल वेरी मच फॉर ज्वाइनिंग टुडे सेशन। वी कंप्लीटेड डिस्कसिंग द 8th चैप्टर of Srimad Bhagavad Gita last week. In the last section, we discussed about, you know, where, you know, Krishna describes about the path of return and the path of no return. The path of return, which is the Krama Mukti, which is followed by, you know, the yogis. We discussed about that, how they gradually go through one planet to the next planet to the next planet, gradually giving up their subtle bodies, you know, step by step. And then we also discussed about, you know, the karmis going to various swargic planets, where also they receive progressively more and more subtler enjoyment, and finally, after exhausting their pious credits, they come back to the material world. Shine come back to the world of human beings. Bhuloka. Shine punye martyalokam vishanti. We discussed that. And finally, he says that these two paths are eternal paths. They have been existing since time immemorial. No? And and by one of these paths, one returns back to the material, to the Bhuloka, or the material world. And by another path, one reaches there and never returns back. So, and he says that the yogi who knows about these two paths is very clear about what to practice and what not to practice. He says, therefore, you should be a yogi, O Arjuna, like that Krishna suggests, you know, in comparison to being a karmi, better to be a yogi like that. And he says, Vedeshu yajneshu tapasu chaiva daneshu yat punya phalam pradishtam atyeti tatsarva midam viditva yogi param sthanam upaiti chadyam. Knowing this conclusion, the yogi who also has in his practice an element of bhakti, he surpasses the realm of swarga, the punya papa, which is described in the Karmakandiya section of the Vedas. And he attains the spiritual eternal place. Okay. So therefore, you be a yogi, you know, like that, he says, Krishna says. And this is where we discussed, ended this chapter. Actually, if you see in this middle six chapters, Krishna speaks about Pradhani Bhuta Bhakti, or predominant devotional service, and Shuddha Bhakti, pure devotional service. So in the seventh chapter, he discussed about Karma Mishra Bhakti and Jnana Mishra Bhakti. And in eighth chapter, he mostly speaks about Yoga Mishra Bhakti. So this is where we ended our eighth chapter. Of course, last week I was traveling to Chowpatty, so I could not take the last Friday session. So today we are going to start the ninth chapter. And of course, we decided that, you know, it is so appropriate that we are going to start discussing about pure devotional service immediately after Radhashtami, after taking blessings from Srimati Radharani. So it is very appropriate that, you know, we did not start the ninth chapter last Friday, and we are starting it today with the, hopefully with the blessings of Srimati Radharani on her divine appearance day of Sri Radhashtami. So today we are going to start the ninth chapter, which is titled by Srila Prabhupada as Transcendental, the Most Confidential Knowledge, or Raja Guhya Yoga. But before we start the ninth chapter, if there are any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share, ask, add, You can please go ahead, either raise your hands or type your questions in the chat box, whatever you may feel comfortable. From the 8th chapter, if there are any quick discussion points, comments or questions, we can take it right now. Okay. If there is none, okay, there is one question in the chat box. The question is, whenever it is said that one has crossed the stage of anartha nivritti, so it has to be understood that one's punya is also destroyed. Actually, one's punya gets destroyed right from the time he receives faith, adau shraddha. From that point onwards, his enjoyment or his pleasures are not due to his punya, because all his punya account is gone. Subsequently, whatever he enjoys is only directly orchestrated by Krishna. It is on the strength of his bhakti and it is not on the strength of his punya. So what to speak of, after crossing anartha nivritti, right from the stage of adau shraddha, from that point onwards, his enjoyment is not due to punya. So there is no question of punya for a devotee or papa for a devotee. Anything else before we move forward? Okay. There is a very nice question, even though we have discussed this in detail before, but nevertheless, we will take it now. The question is, why the time of death is so important in deciding one's next birth, more than even how one conducts oneself in his life? Actually, Krishna says, in the 8th chapter only, that antakalecha mameva smaran muktva kalevaram yap prayati samadbhavam yati nastyatra samshayaha. He says that at the time of death, O Arjuna, if someone, even though it says smaran, remembrance, but actually the acharyas explain, it is not just remembrance, it is realization. At the time of birth, if one has come to the stage of realizing Krishna, then he attains Krishna. Okay. And then he mentions the principle that yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tijatyante kalevaram tam tameva iti kaunteya sada tad bhava bhavitaha. He says that because whatever you do, whatever you remember at the time of death, you attain that nature. And what you remember at the time of death, sadata bhava bhavitaha. Whatever you have always been thinking, that you will be able to think at the time of death. So the hint is dropped there by Krishna in that very next verse. So is Krishna giving overwhelming importance to what? The time of death, it may, very superficially, it may seem like that. But in the very next verse, Krishna says, Tasmat, Sarveshu Kaleshu Mam Anusmara Yudhyacha. Tasmat, therefore, Arjuna, if you have to remember me at the time of death, Sarveshu Kaleshu Mam Anusmara Yudhyacha. At all times, you should remember me and fight, Krishna says. So, which means, if one is able to remember Krishna or realize Krishna throughout, at all times, then at the time of death, one can remember Krishna. So, is actually the time of death given inordinate importance? Not really. Not really. Actually, if only we have practiced to realize Krishna from Adav Shraddha, Tata sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya, anartanavurti, nishtha, ruchi, asakti, bhava, prema. And at the stage of prema, one completely realizes Krishna. If one has not practiced all these things and reached the stage of prema, then there is no question of, at the time of death, remembering Krishna, realizing Krishna. So, therefore, it's not that the time of death is the all-deciding factor. Yes, it decides where you will go, but it decides based on what you have done throughout your life. Only that much. So at the time of death, you cannot do anything significantly different and change your destination. So if throughout your life, if till half an hour before your death, if you have reached only till Anartana Vritti, then at the time of death, you will be only at the stage of Anartana Vritti. And you will again have to take birth and continue from Anartana Vritti. If 2 days before time of death, if you have reached only till Anartana Vritti, there is a very good chance that even in the next 2 days, you will not make significant advancement and cross Nishtha, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, Prema and reach Prema. Even though you may have 1,000 people coming and chanting, still, if we are still at the stage of Anartana Vritti, it's very likely that our heart, which is ridden with anarthas, may most likely be attached to one of the material things only. Or even if it may somehow get attached to some spiritual object, still it may not reach the stage of prema, which is the stage of self-realization. So it's very, in one sense, people who do not understand this principle completely, they may actually put an inordinate emphasis on just the time of death. But in reality, it is actually just the time of death. That's all. Nothing more than that. So whatever we have done, just like if just before entering the examination hall, if you have not studied anything, even before writing the exam, you know what is going to happen. So it is just a question. Okay. Next question, what is the difference between self-realization and God realization? Actually, on the path of bhakti, complete self-realization is concomitant with God realization. Fully realizing Krishna means realizing our own relationship with Krishna also. It is not just realizing that we are not this body, we are the soul. That is one level of self-realization. But the real self-realization is understanding what is our relationship with Krishna. That is complete self-realization. Okay, anything else before we start the ninth chapter? Okay, if there is none, let's start. Very auspicious chapter, the most confidential knowledge we are going to hear, which is Raja Guhya Yoga. So Krishna starts this chapter. He says, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Idam Tute Guhyatamam Pravakshamyanasuyave Jnanam Vijnana Sahitam Yadhyatva Mokshase Shubhat. So he says, Hey Pravakshyam, I can speak to you, O Arjuna. Why? Anasuya ve. Asuya. Asuya means envy. Anasuya ve means because you have no envy. I will speak to you. Idam. This Guhyatamam, most confidential jnana, knowledge. Vijnana sahitam, along with realization.
Problem. Okay. I understood what is the problem.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Is it all right now? Okay, thank you. Okay. So he says, Te Pravakshyami, I will speak to you Anasuyave, because you are free from envy, I will speak to you. Idam guhyatamam jnanam, this most confidential knowledge, vijnana sahitam, along with realization of me, yad gyatva, and understanding this knowledge, ashubhat mokshase, you will be freed from suffering.
Okay. So I will speak to you because you have no envy, this most secret knowledge of bhakti, along with realization of me, knowing which you will be freed from suffering. Okay, this is what Krishna is promising in the first verse. So Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur summarizes this chapter in the first purport. He says, the majestic aspect of the Lord as the object of worship, suitable for his servants, and the excellence of that pure devotee are described clearly in the ninth chapter. Understanding Krishna's Aishwarya, his majestic aspect, and the excellence of that pure devotee who realizes that majestic aspect of the Lord is described in the ninth chapter. Bhakti is superior to karma, jnana, yoga and the other processes. As described in the seventh chapter, such bhakti is either pradhani bhuta or kevala. Either predominant bhakti or pure bhakti. Okay. Only if bhakti is in predominance or bhakti is exclusively present, only then it is called as bhakti. Otherwise, if bhakti is secondary element, then it is called as karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga, etc. And amongst the types of bhakti, the supreme position of kevala bhakti, pure devotional service, which is extremely powerful and not dependent on the purity of the heart or other elements like jnana, has clearly been shown. In fact, bhakti is the only process, Shuddha bhakti is the only process to practice which there is no prerequisite of a very pure heart or any purity at all. It is not needed. So, the ninth chapter begins to speak about the powers of the Lord required as knowledge in order to perform that pure bhakti. So, in order to perform pure bhakti, a basic understanding of Krishna's Aishwarya is very critical. Who Krishna is, how great he is, without properly understanding that, if we just understand Krishna's sweet pastimes, it can be very misleading. Therefore, even in the most confidential knowledge, which Krishna is Guhya Tamagyan, that Bhagavad Gita talks about, there is no description of Rasa Leela or even Govardhan Leela for that matter. It is all about Krishna's majestic aspect. The Gita is the essence of all scriptures. And the essence of the Gita is the middle six chapters. Sarvopanishado gavo dogda gopalanandana partho vatsaha sudhir bokta dugdam gita mritam mahat. The Gita Mahatmya is mentioned. If all the Upanishads is compared to cow, and the milkman is gopalanandana, Krishna, partho vatsaha, Arjuna is like the calf, Sudhir Bhokta, and the enjoyers of the Gita are those who accept the Gita. They are the actual enjoyers of this knowledge. Dugdam Gita Amritam Mahat, and the milk is Gita. Okay, so Gita is the essence of all scriptures, just like milk is the essence of the cow. Okay, and the essence of Gita is the middle six chapters. Okay, 7 to 12. And the middle of those six chapters are the ninth and tenth chapters. It is the further essence of the six chapters. In three verses, the Lord praises what he will be describing in this chapter. So, in three verses, he is going to describe what he will describe, what he will discuss in this chapter. Idam tute guhyatamam pravakshyami anasuyave. I am going to speak this most confidential knowledge to you because you are free of envy. The jnana, which gives liberation, described in the second, third, and other chapters, is guhya or secret. 2 to 6. Okay. Is the knowledge which gives rise to liberation. Okay. And then he says, the knowledge which I revealed in the 7th and 8th chapter, which is suitable for attainment of me. Attainment of me means mostly the abode of the Lord. The method of knowledge, bhakti, by which Bhagavan is known, is Guhyatara. So, jnana is defined as that by which something is known. Thus, bhakti is called jnana since by bhakti, Bhagavan is known. That's why it is called as jnana or knowledge. In this chapter, I will speak to you knowledge about kevala or shuddha bhakti, which is by far guhyatama, most secret. Most secret is the knowledge of pure devotional service. By the word jnana or knowledge, one should understand that it means only bhakti, not the well-known jnana mentioned in the first six chapters. So here, because it is called as jnana because it is the means by which Krishna is known. In the second verse, by using the adjective avyayam or indestructible, it must be understood that this knowledge is beyond the gunas, because anything which is within the three gunas, that is not indestructible. So, therefore, in the next verse, Krishna says, Rajavidya, Rajagushyam, Pavitram, Midamuttamam, Pratyakshavagamam, Dharmyam, Susukam, Kartum, Avyayam. Avyayam. It is indestructible, he says, which means it has to be beyond the three modes. So, only the knowledge of bhakti is beyond, Shuddha bhakti is beyond three modes. All knowledge of all other processes is within the three modes only. At the most, they may be in mode of goodness. It is bhakti which is beyond the gunas, not the jnana mentioned earlier, which is in sattva guna. In verse 3, the word dharma means only bhakti as well. Pratyakshavagamam dharmyam. Or in the third verse, he says, Ashraddhadana purusha dharmasyasya parantapa apraapyamam nivartante mrityu samsara vartmani. Which means, one who does not have faith in this particular dharma or bhakti. Okay. So, the jnana mentioned here refers to bhakti. The dharma mentioned here is also bhakti. Okay. So he says, I will teach this most secret bhakti to you, to one who is not hostile or selfish. Anasuyave. This indicates that there is a rule that bhakti should be taught to one who is not selfish or inimical. So one who is inimical, one should not be taught, especially bhakti, one should not be taught. Then it becomes the ninth offense. Ninth offense means to instruct a faithless person about the glories of the holy name or glories of bhakti or anything about bhakti. So inimical person or self-opinionated persons, to them this topic should not be discussed or explained, because they will become all the more inimical and we will become the cause of increasing that envy or inimical nature, or offensive nature. And we will get reaction for that. Okay. So he says, I will teach you this bhakti, culminating in direct realization of me. Bhaktya mam abhijanati. Bhaktyaham ekaya grahyaha. So I will teach you this bhakti, culminating in direct realization of me, by which you will be freed from rebirth or freed from the obstacles to bhakti. Ashubhat. Ashubhat means all the obstacles to bhakti. Anarthas. So when one realizes Krishna, there is atyantiki anarthanavritti, complete destruction of all anarthas, which are considered here to be obstacles to attaining the goal of bhakti. Okay.
So that's what here Krishna says in this first verse. Idam tute guhyatamam pravakshyami anasuyave. O Arjuna, I will speak to you this most secret knowledge because you are not envious, you are not inimical to you. And along with this knowledge, I will also speak the realization of me. How through this knowledge of Shuddha Bhakti, you can realize me. And once you realize me, you can be freed from all kinds of obstacles to bhakti. Moksha se ashubhat. Or moksha se ashubhat also means that you will be freed from rebirth. Ashubhat, the most inauspicious thing which is to take birth in this world again. This is what Krishna says in this first verse. Any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share as add? Yes, Keshav Priya Mataji.
Prabhuji, Hare Krishna, not pronounced. Prabhuji, I missed 5 minutes in between. I don't know whether you explained, Prabhuji. Sorry if you explained. What is this enviousness actually means, Prabhuji? What is it Krishna means here by you're not envious? What does it he mean, Prabhuji?
Envy means, envy towards surrender, envy towards accepting a person higher than us, envy towards devotees, or envy towards the process of bhakti. All of that is envy.
So if someone is envious, he cannot accept this chapter, this ninth chapter, what Krishna is going to speak now.
Yeah. Actually, towards the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that this whole knowledge of Bhagavad Gita should not be spoken to those who are envious. What to speak of only this?
Prabhuji, we sadhakas also, Prabhuji, with
not that kind of envy. Not that kind of envy.
Oh.
Yes, envious means envy in one's faith. Not envy in one's envy as a
swabhava.
Swabhava. Not envy in one's swabhava. It's not talking about that.
Okay, Prabhuji. Thank you, Prabhuji.
Okay. There is one question. Why bhakti is called guhyatara? Actually, the mixed bhakti or pradhani bhuta bhakti, which is described in the 7th and 8th chapter, that is called as guhyatara. And shuddha bhakti is guhyatama, most confidential. Okay, next question. How do we identify a faithless person by investing some time with him? Only by that we can understand. By spending some time and genuinely trying to understand that person, we can identify where his faith is or whether he has faith or not. That is the way of finding out. That is the way we can find out a faithless person. So by talking with him, gradually, by having a conversation, we can understand where he has his faith, like that. So therefore, we should not be over eager to dump our knowledge of bhakti or everything on that person. We should first spend some time trying to understand where he is, where his faith is, like that. Okay, next. If the knowledge is guhya tama, then how we are all able to hear this? We are not as non-envious like Arjuna. So, we may not be as non-envious as Arjuna. So that's why I clarified that this is not talking about envy in our swabhava. It is more talking about envy on the level of faith, where I am unconvinced that it is, I am unconvinced of surrendering to Krishna. There may be inability to surrender to Krishna. That is a different thing. Okay. Because of my material attachments. But we are talking about lack of conviction to surrender to Krishna. I am not convinced. I don't think I need to surrender.
Okay. Anyways, talking about that kind of non-envy. So, but there is a more critical question that you have asked, which is, if it is most confidential knowledge, then how come it is so openly presented? Okay. How come it is most so openly presented? So, this is so openly presented because the qualification to attend the to understand this knowledge is very rare. That is why it is most confidential. Even though the knowledge is there, the ability to assimilate it and apply it is very compromised. It's like giving a box full of gold, diamonds, everything, but it is locked with a very strong lock and the key is not there. So what is the use of that? So even though it is so openly kept, and let's say that no one can break open that box also or the lock also. So it's as good as not having it. So the qualification to understand this knowledge is Sukriti, Shraddha, faith. That one develops, that one can assimilate it only through the association of devotees and gaining that Ajnata Sukriti. In the absence of that, this knowledge cannot be understood. Therefore, it is so openly presented. It is so openly presented because even though it is openly there, not everyone can understand it and assimilate it. So, that is the understanding. Okay, next question. This knowledge will give freedom from birth and death, but even Guhya knowledge gives liberation, which sounds similar. Yeah, you know, true. So that's not the exclusive, that is not the exclusive glory of this Guhya Tama knowledge. Okay, that's not the exclusive glory. Yeah, yes, Guhya Tara knowledge also, or even Guhya knowledge also. Even knowledge of Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga can give one Sahajya Mukti, by which one can escape birth and death. So therefore, Yajyatva Mokshase Ashubhat, Idantute Guhyatamam Pravakshan Yanasuyave, Jnanam Vijnana Sahitam Yajyatva Mokshase Ashubhat. So this is not the exclusive glory of this knowledge. The real glory is realizing Krishna. Vijnana, that is the real glory of this knowledge. Okay, next. Does envy or inimical nature can also mean one who is envious of Krishna and his devotees? That's what it means, actually. Why knowing the power of Lord is necessary to develop Kevala Bhakti? Otherwise, we cannot love Krishna like just we love another normal person, because that would be material affection. We should understand that Krishna is so great. Only if we understand the greatness of a person, then when such a great person exhibits qualities like Vatsalya, Bhakta Vatsalya, then it really touches the heart. Otherwise, if an ordinary person, let's say if you are a counselor and your counselee who is junior to you, who does not know much about bhakti, if they show some affection to you, you are not so, you feel good, but you are not so really touched. But when a great person, whose greatness is very well documented, and you have very clearly understood the greatness of that person, when that person comes down and shows affection to you, then it really touches. So therefore, understanding this Aishwarya Gyan is very critical. Otherwise, we will start taking the stories in the Krishna book just like a comic book. You know, any ordinary person, any normal person, in some cases maybe little bit extraordinary person, that's all. So therefore, it is very important to start understanding this jnana.
Susukam kartum avyayam. From my limited experience so far in practice of bhakti, there is significant satisfaction in Krishna consciousness, but the joy seems missing, as against there was joy in life before Krishna consciousness, also understood to be material. But satisfaction was completely missing, the very reason for taking up to Krishna consciousness. Please clarify. Okay, we will take up this question because we have not yet reached Susukam Kartum Avyayam verse. We will take it up when we reach there. Okay. Okay, next question. Should we take that Krishna starts this chapter with a disclaimer that it is for pure devotion and not for karma jnana yogis? Yeah, it is not so explicit. But it is very implicit in the way it is presented. It's very, very much implied, but it's not so explicit. But you will have to get over the purports to understand this. And you will accept those purports only if you already have pure devotion. Otherwise, those purports will not make any meaning to you. Like that. So, and okay. So, if we, the next question was, it is connected to the previous question. Why knowing of the power of the Lord is necessary to develop Kevala Bhakti? So, I said, if you do not know, then you may develop a very sahajiya type of understanding of Krishna's pastimes. But then, the next question is, oh, then if we know about the, glories or the power of Krishna, will our bhakti not be mixed with awe and reverence? Well, that much awe and reverence to begin with is definitely needed. That much awe and reverence acts as the launch pad to develop proper respect. And only from proper respect, actually, one can develop proper affection. So, therefore, it is very, very critical. So, only from proper respect can proper love come. Otherwise, that love is not proper love. So then when that love becomes, overwhelmingly great, then it subdues the awe and reverence. That's all. So it's not that one does not know about the glories of Krishna. That knowledge gets subdued when by our practice and proper association, that love becomes overwhelming. But that love can develop only when there is proper respect. And that respect one can develop only when we know who really Krishna is and what are his glories. So therefore, one should not think that, oh, the less and less I hear about the Aishwarya of Krishna, the more there is a chance that I will develop Braja Bhakti. No. This is not correct. Actually, at Vaidhi Sadhana level, we should definitely know about the glories of Krishna. How Krishna is superior, what are his powers and everything. When one understands that, only then proper respect will be developed. Without proper respect, there is no question of proper love developing at all. That love is sahajiya love. And that love will not get us to the right destination. Rather, that kind of love will become an obstacle to attaining real love. So therefore, at our stage, we should be unabashedly accepting these explanations of, understanding. We should be very eager to understand about Krishna's powers and Aishwarya. Like that. Okay. If there are no further discussion points, comments or questions, let us move forward.
to the next verse. So in the next verse, he very beautifully describes what is that Guhyatama Gyan that I am going to describe to you. He further describes that knowledge, most confidential knowledge. Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam Pavitram Midamuttamam Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam Susukam Kartum Avyayam. Raja Vidya, this is the highest type of bhakti. Okay, I have described to you about Karma Mishra Bhakti, Jnana Mishra Bhakti and Yoga Mishra Bhakti, but this is Raja Vidya. This is the highest type of bhakti. Raja Guhyam, the most secret type of bhakti. Pavitram Idam Uttamam, and it is the most purifying of all the methods. Pratyaksha Avagamam, it is directly realized. Dharmyam, it is the highest dharma. Susukam Kartum means it is very easy to execute. That's what it means. Susukam Kartum means it is very easy to execute. And Avyayam, it is eternal. So eternal means any other sadhana. Sakama Karma Yoga, some practices of Sakama Karma Yoga are given up when one develops qualification for Nishkama Karma Yoga. Nishkama Karma Yoga is given up when one develops qualification for Jnana Yoga. That Jnana is given up when one reaches the stage of Brahma Bhuta or Ajivan Mukta. But Bhakti at the stage of Sadhana or Sadhya, practice or perfection, it is not given up. Therefore, the only avyayam, eternal practice is only bhakti. So, describing this particular subject matter, which Krishna in the first verse had described to be guhyatamam, idam tute guhyatamam pravakshyam yanasuyave. I am going to tell you about the most confidential knowledge. Vijnana sahitam, along with how you can realize me through that practice of bhakti. So he says this is Raja Vidya, this is the highest type of bhakti. Raja Guhyam, the most secret type of bhakti. And Pavitram Idam Uttamam, the most purifying of all the methods. Pratyaksha Avagamam, it is directly realized. Dharmyam, it is the highest dharma. Susukam Kartum, and it is easy to execute. And Avyayam, eternal. Okay. Now, I think this is a long purport. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 7 slides. Okay, not that long actually. So, we will go through these 7 slides to understand. There are various aspects of bhakti that he has, Shuddha Bhakti that he has mentioned. First, he has mentioned it as Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam, Pavitram Idam Uttamam, Pratyakshavagamam, Dharmyam, Susukam Kartum, and Avyayam. Seven aspects of pure devotional service Krishna has mentioned in this particular verse. 7 slides are there. Okay. We will try to understand what Krishna means by these descriptions. Okay. He says, moreover, this knowledge, bhakti, is the king of knowledge, Raja Vidya, meaning the king of worship. There are various types of bhakti, and this is the king, are in the highest position, exceeding all others. The usage of Raja Vidya is similar to the word Raja Danta or front teeth. As in the usage Raja Danta, front teeth or the king of teeth, there is reversal of the normal order of the elements of the compound words. So actually it should be Vidya Raja, the king of Vidya. But Sometimes the order is reversed for particular purposes. Anyways, so this is just a grammatical thing. But the point is, of the various kinds of bhakti, Karma Mishra Bhakti, Jnana Mishra Bhakti, Yoga Mishra Bhakti, and Shuddha Bhakti, this Shuddha Bhakti is actually considered to be the Raja Vidya, the supreme form of knowledge or the supreme form of worship, the king of all worship. Okay, then he explains from Panini Sutra, this is permitted according to the rule, Raja Dantaditvad. So, okay, next, Raja Guhyam. Of all secrets, it is the highest. Bhakti of any type is very secret, whether it is, Karma Mishra, Jnana Mishra, Yoga Mishra Bhakti, or Shuddha Bhakti. Bhakti of any type is secret. And of all the types of bhakti, this Kevala Bhakti, Anya Vilashita, Shunyam, Jnana Karma, Dhyanavartam, Anukulyena, Krishna, Nushilanam. This is the king, the most secret, Raja Guhyam. Okay. Next, he says that Pavitram Uttamam, it is called most purifying because it acts as the atonement of all sins. Prayaschittani Chirnani Narayana Paranmukam na Nishpunanti Rajendra Surakumbam Ivapagam. Or what is the other verse in the there are so many verses in the Ajamil section which talks about bhakti being the topmost type of atonement, how practice of little bhakti destroys, all kinds of sins. It is even more purifying than knowledge of the soul, the Tvam Padartha. According to Madhusudan Saraswati, since it immediately uproots all the sinful reactions, spread over many thousands of lifetimes which are situated in the gross and subtle bodies, and as well uproots the cause of all sins, that is ignorance, it is called the most purifying of all things. Aprarabdha phalam papam kutam bijam phalon mukam krameneiva praliyeta Vishnu bhakti ratatmanam. So bhakti purifies one from all kinds of sinful reactions, the prarabdha karma, aprarabdha karma, and the cause of that sinful desires, ignorance, everything is destroyed. Therefore, bhakti is called as pavitram idam uttamam, uttamam pavitram. And this is the explanation given by Madhusudan Saraswati. Madhusudan Saraswati is a follower of Shankaracharya. That Madhusudan Saraswati agrees that bhakti uproots all sinful reactions spread over many thousands of lifetimes which are situated in the gross and subtle bodies, and as well uproots the cause of all sins, which is ignorance. Okay. Then the next that is given is, it gives direct realization. Pratyaksha avagamam. Okay. Pratyaksha avagamam. Practice of bhakti. We may practice bhakti being inspired by the instructions of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. But there must be some practical benefit which we are directly experiencing. Otherwise, our faith in Guru Sadhu Shastra also will be shaken. Okay. So, here it is mentioned, one can directly realize the effect of bhakti. How? He says, bhakti hi pareshanubhavo viraktir anyatra chaisha trika eka kalaha prapadya manasya yatashnatasyus tushtihi pushtihi Shudapayo anugahasam. He says, Bhaktihi, devotion, para isha anubhavaha, direct experience of the Supreme Lord, anyatra viraktircha, and detachment from all other things. These three things. When one progresses in bhakti, progressive experience of the Supreme Lord, progressively detachment from things of this world, these three, esha trika eka kala kalaha syuhu, these three occur simultaneously. For whom? Prapadyamanasya. For one who has taken shelter of Krishna, these three things happen simultaneously. So, virakti is something which is directly experienceable. Pratyaksha vagamam. And to some extent, we will be able to experience the positive hands of Krishna also in many different ways. That is also pratyaksha vagamam. Yata, just as tushtihi pushtihi kshudapayo. Tushti means the pleasure. Pushti means fullness of the stomach. Kshud apaya means relief from hunger. All these three things are experienced simultaneously, anughasam, with each bite. Ashnataha, for a person engaged in eating, you know, it's not that the first morsel gives him pleasure, the second morsel, fills his stomach, and the third morsel gives him relief from hunger. No, with every morsel, there is progressively more and more experience of pleasure, fullness of stomach, and relief from hunger. Okay. So, Rajavidya, Rajaguhyam, Pavitram Idam Uttamam, Pratyaksha Vagamam. Four things we have already discussed. Then three more things remaining. I think three more slides remaining. Yeah, three more aspects of bhakti and three more slides remaining. Okay. From this verse of Bhagavatam, it should also be understood that the realization is constant. Since the realization comes in accordance with the worship and the Ananya Bhakta constantly worships the Lord. Okay. So, realization means that which is constant. That is called as realization. Okay. Otherwise, you may say some experience. But that experience becomes a realization when it is unwavering, fixed. This is about Pratyaksha Vagama. Okay. Next he says, Dharmyam. Dharmyam means it does not deviate from Dharma. Dharmyam. Because even though one may fail to perform all Dharmas or religious duties, those Dharmas are fulfilled simply by executing Bhakti. Okay. So if one practices bhakti, then one need not practice the other dharmas. Simply by practicing bhakti, all dharma is automatically accomplished. This is understood from the statement of Narada Muni. Very famous statement. Yata taror mula nishechanena tripyanti tatskanda bujopashakaha pranopahara chayatendriyanam tataiva sarvaranam achyuta ijya. Yata tripyanti tatskanda buja upashakaha. Just as the branches and twigs are satisfied, taror mula nishechanena. Nishechanena means by watering. By watering the root. Yata indriyanam, and just as the senses are satisfied, prana upaharat, by nourishing the life air. So when prana becomes nourished by anna, food. When we eat food, the prana becomes strong. And when prana becomes strong, the senses become strong. Pranopaharat, when you do a upahara to prana, when you do some service to the prana by giving it food, by giving food to the person, yata indriyana, automatically the senses become very energetic. Tata eva, in the same way, achyuta ijya,
by worshipping the Supreme Lord, Sarva Arhanam, all other type of worship is accomplished. Deva, Rishi, Bhuta, Apta, Nrinam, Pitrunam, Nakinkaro, Nayam, Rinicha, Rajan, Sarvatmanaya, Sharanam, Charanyam, Gato, Mukundam, Parihritya Kartum. So, in this way, it is mentioned that Dharmyam, even though by practice of bhakti, one may not necessarily practice perfectly his other Varnashrama Dharma, but still one should not think that, oh, he is adharmic, because bhakti itself is dharma. It is not just dharma, but it is parodharma. Savai pumsam parodharmo yato bhaktir adokshase. Ahaituki apratihata yayatma suprasidati. Okay. Two more points remaining. We have seen Rajavidya, Rajaguhyam, Pavitramidamuttamam, Pratyakshavagamam, Dharmyam. 5 points we have seen. Susukam, Kartum and Avyayam. Two more things are remaining. So, what is Susukam, Kartum? Unlike Karma, Jnana and the other processes, bhakti is easy to execute. Susukam, Kartum. There are no extreme pains to the body, voice or mind by renunciation of the senses. Since bhakti makes use of the ears and other senses as principal elements in hearing, chanting and other processes. Of course, this is mostly true. Actually, there has been some, at Chowpatti, there is some marriage ceremony or some ceremony going on. There was loud kirtan. So, I had to literally shout in one sense to not hear the other noise which was coming. So, after shouting for a significant time, it is very interesting. So, very. Srila Vishwanatha Chakradhara says, there are no extreme pains to the body or voice. Actually, my voice is breaking down now, in one sense, because of, shouting. But actually, one need not. One need not. This is in the normal sense, in the normal case, one need not. This is not a regular practice, actually. There are no extreme pains to the body, voice, or mind by renunciation of senses. Since bhakti makes use, because pain comes when the senses beg you, please feed me, feed me, feed me. And you say, no, 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 no. But bhakti engages all of that. So, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchyate. So, Kriti Sadhya Bhavet Sadhya Bhavasa Sadhana Bida. Nitya Siddhasya Bhavasya Prakatyam Hridi Sadhyata. So sadhana bhakti means engaging all the senses and mind in the service of Krishna. So there is engagement of senses. There can be favorable engagement of senses also. One is allowed to engage the senses in limbs of devotion according to one's likes. So there is no extreme pain. So, because extreme pain is there when the senses are screaming for gratification and every time we will have to say no. But in bhakti, it's not like that. Sometimes bhakti is misunderstood. Sometimes people say bhakti means what? Anything you like to do, if you do because you like to do, that is not bhakti, people say like that. Or sometimes people say that if you do things which you don't like, then you will progress very fast. This is also not correct. Basically, bhakti means to do activities which are pleasing to Krishna. And within those activities, one can choose those activities which one likes and perform, and one can perform with nice absorption. That is very much allowed.
So therefore, one need not like, oh, you like it, I will not do. I like it means I will have to stay away from it. No, that is not at all needed in bhakti. Within the within those categories of activities which fall within the category of anukul for bhakti, one can definitely choose those activities which one likes. That is very much allowed. And that is what will give actually absorption in bhakti. And whatever when bhakti is performed with absorption, then definitely there is fast progress. So susukam kartum means, unlike karma jnana and the other process, bhakti is easy to execute. There are no extreme pains to the body, voice or mind by renunciation of the senses. Since bhakti makes use of the ears and other senses as principal elements in hearing, chanting and other processes. Now, six aspects of bhakti are over. This is the sixth aspect, susukam kartum. Then the seventh aspect is avyayam. Because it is beyond the gunas, the process of bhakti is eternal. Unlike such processes, karma and jnana, which are temporary, they have to be given up at some point. But bhakti is never given up. So the limbs of bhakti at the sadhana avastha, they remain as sadhana, the means. But at the stage of prema, the same limbs of bhakti become anubhavas. Anubhavas means natural expression of one's love. So in Vrindavan, also Mother Yashoda and all the Vrajavasis are engaging in Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Padasevanam, etc. And Archanam is not to deity form, directly to Krishna. They are engaging in all these practices, but not as a sadhana. That is a natural expression of their love. When they are overwhelmed by love towards Krishna, which is always, they naturally start singing his name. They start chanting his name. So they start remembering him. They start cooking for him. They start dressing him. All of which in this material world we practice as sadhana, this is practiced as a natural byproduct of their love. So, in essence, the limbs of bhakti are never given up. Otherwise, the principle is that sadhana is given up as soon as one attains one's sadhya. Sadhya means goal. Sadhana means practice. So, the practice is given up as soon as one attains one's goal. But in bhakti, the means becomes the end. Direct manifestations of prema, anubhavas, like that. So in this way, actually, this verse is described. Rajavidya, Rajaguhyam, Pavitram Midamuttamam, Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam, Susukam, Kartum, Avyayam. So this is the explanation of this particular verse. We will pause for some discussion points, comments, questions. If anything anyone would like to share as add, you can please go ahead. Any quick discussion points, questions, comments? Okay, Shiva Kumar.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. The now comes. Prabhu, one question I added in the chat box, Prabhu, earlier. You said you will cover it after the second verse.
Yeah. So can you repeat the question verbally?
Yes. So basically, from my limited experience, Prabhu, I see there is immense satisfaction in Krishna consciousness, but some of the joy is missing. Whereas the life before KC, the joy was there. While I understand it is predominantly material, but there was no satisfaction, Prabhu. So here in this verse, when we hear that it is done so sukham kartum avyayam, I am going by Srila Prabhupada's purport. I had that question.
So joy must be understood to be joy in performance. Because any endeavor to achieve a goal is strenuous. So when you have to compare bhakti as a sadhana, then you should also compare it with material endeavors to attain material goals. So when you try to material endeavors to attain material goals are not so much susukam kartum. Like, for example, in bhakti, honoring prasadam is also a limb of bhakti. Taking darshan of the beautiful forms of the Lord is a very powerful limb of bhakti. So there are so many limbs which, singing and dancing, which sometimes people have to pay to go to, disco or whatever. That is actually a limb of bhakti. People come together and freely do it. Even though, so when we are talking about joy, we are talking about, because bhakti for us is a sadhana. Sadhana means to attain a goal. And any means to attain a goal has to be performed with some endeavor. So you should ideally compare it with any material endeavor to attain a goal. So in comparison to that, is bhakti not susukam kartum?
Okay, got it. Now I get it, Prabhu. It's true, Prabhu. It's joyful.
Yeah.
Like, especially considering the supremacy of the goal, it is truly joyful.
Yeah, and there is another meaning of susukam kartum, which is, in bhakti, there is so much, actually incentive to do it in the association of devotees. Rather than in the material thing, anywhere to in the material endeavors to attain any goal, you need to compete with people. But you have to outperform them. But in bhakti, there is so much incentive for co-performing with devotees. You don't have to compete. There is a big stress when you will have to compete with people. In bhakti sadhana, there is no competition on you. So if your next person, and you can copy in the exam, fully copy. The more you copy, the better it is. So the person who is showing you his answer sheet is also rewarded. And if you copy from his answer sheet, you are also rewarded. So, which means there is all incentive for taking help. So you don't possess something, you take it from your friend. So there is incentive for making friendship in bhakti. But if you have to compete with people, there is no incentive for friendship. So, therefore, the process is joyful because you are encouraged to perform in the association of devotees. So, therefore, that is one major aspect of joy of bhakti, because there is so much incentive to perform it in the association of devotees.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Anything else anyone would like to share as add before we move forward to the next verse? Yes, Keshav Priyamadhi.
Prabhuji, that was pronounced. You presented now all the positive aspects of bhakti, Prabhuji, definitely. But there is something like we are sacrificing many things also, no, Prabhuji. That point you actually didn't speak much, but it is not that we are not sacrificing anything here.
I never said that. So when we have to talk about bhakti, we have to have a frame of reference for comparison. So here the frame of reference is karma jnana yoga, which also involve lot of sacrifices.
Correct.
So therefore any sadhana will involve some endeavor, some sacrifice to attain a goal. So to say that in bhakti as a sadhana should not have any sacrifice, no one is claiming that. But we are comparing it with a particular frame of reference.
Right.
So we are seeing bhakti as a sadhana. So you should consider, compare it with other sadhanas. Jnana sadhana, yoga sadhana, karma sadhana, material sadhana for attaining some material goals. Compare with that and see the goal that we attain and the amount of sacrifice that we have to sacrifice for attaining that goal. For karma, how much you have to sacrifice for attaining only swarga, which is temporary. For jnana, see how much you have to sacrifice for attaining sahija mukti. And in bhakti, how much you have to sacrifice for attaining Krishna prema. So where is the comparison?
So though the sacrifice is less here, but still people choose karma and jnana also, no, Prabhuji?
Because of lack of sukriti.
And the Pradhani Bhutta Bhaktas, they do predominantly bhakti. So you were telling the other day that they know perfectly about the science of bhakti, but still they choose to take up only that. You're telling like that, no, Prabhuji, the other day?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it is not that they don't know or they don't about bhakti. So what is it missing in them, Prabhuji, then?
Sukriti.
Oh, again, that, yes. They don't meet a devotee.
Yeah, they have not sufficiently received Sukriti from the devotees.
But they are also following the 9 process only, no, Prabhuji. That bhakti part is 9 process only. So from where
they don't have sufficient Sukriti. Nay. Practicing bhakti is one aspect, but they are practicing the limbs of bhakti. But they don't have full faith in the limbs of bhakti. They have some faith in the path of jnana or karma also.
Yes. Now I understand. Thank you, Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Shyamali Mataji.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhuji, my question was actually related to the previous two questions only. My basic question was, when Krishna is saying so very clearly that this is Sushutam Kartamavya, Pratikshva, Punyam, then why do the other persons even exist? Because clearly it is you can just take it and get the highest. Mm-hmm. So, why do so much Hatha Yoga? Why do so much Dhyana Yoga? Read so much scriptures and study so much and give up everything, take sannyas, and still you are not achieving anything close to what you achieve with simple devotional processes. Which,
correct.
The imbalance looks too extreme.
Glaring. Yeah. So, but to see it, you need the eyes of bhakti. Only then you can see. That is why it is Raja Guhyam also. Most secret. You see, you are able to see But you will see 9 out of 10 people will not be able to see what you are seeing. Even though it is so obvious to you, it will not be obvious for 9 out of 10 people. That is why it is not just susukam kartum avyayam, it is also rajaguhyam, very secret. So unless one has that sufficient sukriti, one cannot understand. Is that relevant to you?
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. That all the more actually makes us so much indebted to
indebted. The efforts. Grateful, yes.
Grateful
of
to
course.
Prabhupada has done.
Yes.
This Sukriti all over the world. This is so very, I mean, it is mind-boggling actually.
Yeah, literally mind-boggling actually. What did we do? We didn't do anything. And here we are, you know, at this juncture of our lives, we all, the 29 of us who are in this call, you know, we all have the most valuable thing on earth or in the spiritual world. We have to be, I mean, and we didn't do anything to receive it, actually. It was pure mercy. So we have every reason to be completely grateful. And just we have to be careful not to let it go by committing offenses.
Yes. Thank you so much, Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you. Okay. Okay, there are some questions in the chat box. Let's take. On a slide, it says, realization is constant. Please clarify what constant means. Constant means it does not waver. It's not that, oh, today I think it is like this, tomorrow I think it is something different. No. Then that those are just fleeting experiences. Realization means when there are repeated experiences which reinforce a particular understanding so clearly that it does not, it remains constant. That is realization. Okay. And when we say realization, does that mean practical experience of theory? Yeah. Yes. True. Not just experience, but actually conviction that yes, this theory is perfect and I have experienced it. It's not just experience, but conviction that comes out of that experience. Because not every experience may lead to conviction, but repeated similar experiences lead to conviction. So that conviction is called as realization. How one gets Sukriti and in what all ways? Well, one gets Sukriti when an ordinary person comes in touch with anything connected to bhakti and appreciates it. It could be a devotee, you know, someone, you know, is going on a bicycle and falls down. And someone goes and helps that person, picks him up, you know, repairs his cycle. And the person feels, wow, such a nice person. And if that person happens to be a devotee whom he appreciates, he gets Sukriti. Or if a devotee is going on a bicycle and he falls down, and this person being very helpful in nature, he goes and helps that devotee and in all ways. Because of helping a devotee, he gets Sukriti. And when that Sukriti builds up more and more and more and more and more, at one stage, it matures into faith. Faith in devotional service. That is the qualification for bhakti. Okay. So how do we give Sukriti to people? We give Sukriti to people. Okay, question is answered. Fine, very good. Okay. Anything else before we move forward? Okay. If there are no... Okay. Oh, Mother Gail, where did you manifest from? We didn't see you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Yeah, boy, if I had known, you would have seen me long, long ago. Anyway, in this connection with Sukriti, you know, you defined it, I think, as anything, whenever you appreciate something in connection to bhakti. Mm-hmm. So, and a person's Sukriti can accumulate experience after experience after experience. So I'm wondering if a person, if that same person gets a negative experience in connection with bhakti, is it possible that, you know, okay, here's the question. Once you develop a certain, let's say, 10 units, let's put it like that, 10 units of Sukriti.
Positive. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Is it possible for it to go down to 7? Or once you attain a certain level of Sukriti, will that never diminish?
It can.
It can.
Unfavorable experiences, they will diminish.
Wow.
Yeah. That's why we should be careful in how we deal with people.
Okay. Yeah, I was hoping that it would be like, you know how we say that there's no diminution in this process? I was hoping that that could apply to the accumulation of Sukriti also. But I guess not.
Oh, actually, there is no diminution, has to be understood in the right way. Whether for Sukriti or for Bhakti also. There is no diminution due to death. There is no diminution due to sinful activities. There is no diminution due to pious activities. But there is diminution due to offenses. So, because offenses is actually bhakti only. But negative bhakti. When you engage your, what is bhakti? Engagement of senses and mind favorably in Krishna's service. Okay. So when you favorably engage, then you will get +1, +2, +3, whatever. But if you unfavorably engage, it will be +-1, +-2, or +-3, like that. So it is adding only, there is no diminution. But what you are adding is a negative number. Are you getting it?
Yeah, it just seems like kind of semantics when you put it like that, you know?
Yeah, it's actually, yeah. So basically, it is like a vector quantity.
Yeah? Mm.
So it is like a, you know, so you make 10 units of progress due to proper practice of bhakti, and offenses is nothing but negative bhakti. So let's say you lose two units are gained in the opposite direction due to offenses. So the net amount is 10 + -2, which is 8 units. So 8 units are carried over. That is what is the meaning of no diminution. So similarly, for Sukriti also, if there is 10 units of Sukriti, okay, and 3 units of Dushkriti due to unfavorable experiences in bhakti, so then there will be 7 net units. like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, you know, when you say that it's like a vector type of equation, it sounds almost like a cheating way of saying that there really is exceptions to there being no diminution, because when, you know, if the net is that you end up with less Sukriti, then, you know, really, there is diminution is possible, no matter how you put it.
Yeah. So, so therefore, it looks like cheating. You know why it looks like cheating? Because all the while we have understood it in a particular way. And that's why suddenly, when it is put in this way, it sounds like cheating. But you will get used to it.
Okay, just not today.
Not today, maybe. For a period of time. I will repeat it sufficient number of times.
Okay. Thank you, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Okay. I think we will pause here. It's already close to 9:30. So thank you all very much for your patient listening and your enthusiastic participation. We will meet again next Friday. And this ninth chapter is going to be a very interesting chapter and very nourishing chapter. So please do not miss out. Please keep attending. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur Pad ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.